Hi, welcome everybody to the June 22nd meeting for the Technical Coordinating Committee. We are going to go ahead and get started. And the first thing is the approval of the agenda.
Move to approve the agenda, Michelle Strickland, City of Savannah.
Seconded, Robbie Carlo, GDOT Planning.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Can we get a vote stating your name, starting to my left?
Omar Sanati, approve the agenda.
Yeah. Robbie Carlo, aye.
Michelle Strickland, aye. Ambry Brooks Center, aye.
Jim Aiello, yes.
Deanna Brooks, yes. All right, we will move right along into our action items. The first is the approval of the April 20th TCC meeting minutes. Are there any questions? All right.
Move to approve, Michelle Strickland, City of Savannah.
Second, Jim Aiello, Savannah Hilton Head International Airport.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Can we start with a vote to the left?
Omar Sanati, aye.
Robbie Carlo, aye.
Michelle Strickland, aye.
Kayla Brown, aye.
Ambry Brooks Steiner, aye.
Jim Aiello, yes.
All right, Deanna Brooks, yes. And then the next action item is the 2045 MTP amendment.
Okay, I will make a very quick report on this one. Basically, City of Savannah got awarded some earmark funds to kick off the I-16 exit ramp removal IMR. What happened is in 2015, the MPO actually completed a study, completed the IMR interchange modification report. But since the MPO is not implementing agency, FHWA refused to review the IMR, so it got stalled. So the City of Savannah actually put the project on hold. And now they want to kick off this IMR so that we can start to move on to the next steps. This time they got about $720,000. And the City of Savannah will come up with the local match. So the total is about $900,000. So we already had a coordination meeting between GDOT and the City of Savannah and MPO solicited a meeting. What we decided that is GDOT is going to take over the study. So that way they will refresh the IMR report and then forward it to FHWA for review. If FHWA is okay with it, and we'll move on to the scoping, to the preliminary engineering, to the right-of-way phase and construction. So currently this IMR, the whole I-16 IMR or I-16X removal project is not in the constrained long-range transportation plan. But we want to at least move the scoping phase into the cost band one of the long-range transportation plan, so it can be so that the funds can be programmed into the TIP, and so that way the GDOT can start the process. So this is the first step that we want to do before we do the TIP amendment. We will amend the scoping phase into cost band one of the 2045 long-range transportation plan. The cost is about $900,000, but the actual cost probably we won't know. But if we have balance, and we will use the balance to do the next steps like scoping and preliminary engineering. So we actually advertised for a 15-day public comment period. So far, I haven't received any information and any comments. For this meeting, we would just ask for the TCC to endorse the MTP amendment so that this project can move along.
Are there any specific questions?
Yeah. Does anybody have any questions?
Can we get a motion to endorse?
Yeah, we would need a motion, yes.
I take all motion. Robbie Carlo, GDOT Planning.
Kayla Brown, I'll second.
All right, it's been motioned and seconded. Can we start the vote tomorrow?
Jim Aiello, yes.
Ambria Burke-Center, yes.
Kayla Brown, yes.
Michelle Strickland, yes.
Robbie Cottle, yes.
Omar Sanadi, aye.
Deanna Brooks, yes.
Thank you.
All right, the next item is the fiscal year 2021 to 2024 TIP amendments.
Okay, I would do this one pretty fast as well. So this is the end of the fiscal year. The fiscal year 2023 ends on June the 30th. So we need to check all the TIP projects, especially those in fiscal year 2023, just to make sure that they either get funds authorized or need to be moved to later years if there's anything. So the meat of this document is really in the appendix, because this is where we checked all of the projects currently programmed in the fiscal year 2021 to 2024 TIP. And you can see we are doing a very, very good job in implementing all of those projects. So basically all the projects, the funds were being authorized. Only two projects that cannot make the deadline. So one of those is the US 17 bridge, Back River. This one, we have a right of way programmed in fiscal year 2023, but it's not going to make it. So, GDOT latest estimate is that we are going to move the right of way to 2025. So that means it will be out of the TIP, because our current TIP covers 2021 to 2024. So it will be 2025. So it will be out of the TIP, move out of the TIP. And then the second project that we are going to amend is the I-95. This is the ITS project. Currently, we have construction scheduled in fiscal year 2023, but the project has been delayed. So the construction will be moving to 2026. Another thing, another project that's going to be moved out of the current fiscal year 2021 to 2024 range. So those would be the two amendments. Plus the one that we just talked about, this I-16 exit ramp removal IMR. So we're going to add the scoping phase into fiscal year 2024. So hopefully we can get the funds probably if we add it in 2024, which starts on July the 1st. So the funds probably can be authorized pretty soon, maybe in July. So GDOT can start to work on it. Another project that there's a change is in the transit section. The passenger ferry purchase. So this one is pretty interesting because the funds are programmed in fiscal year 2022 and the federal portion of the funds have been authorized. But after CAT did the bidding and then the cost, the ferry construction is like $7 million more. So CAT has to come up with the local funds in it. Since this is a 2022 money, so maybe we don't need to do a TIP amendment, but since we are not going to adopt a new TIP until like maybe August or maybe October. So basically between now and when the new TIP is adopted, this TIP is still the programming guiding document. So we would rather reflect all of the latest information in the TIP. So that's why we decided that we will process this amendment because it's based on the actual bid. So as you can come back and then you will see these would be the changes. So so the I-16 IMR, as you can see, we're adding to 2024. So the total is $800,000. And then the Florida, this is ITS, I-95 ITS project. So we're moving it out of the TIP. So in 2024, it will be $0. In 2023, it will be $0. And then the Back River project. So we're basically moving the right of way out of the TIP. So and then the CAT, the project, as you can see, this is the original. These funds have been authorized, but more than $7 million has been added. So but like I said, pretty much almost all of the other projects have been implemented. The funds have been authorized except these. four. So we would just ask for your endorsement of the proposed TIP amendment so that we can reflect the accurate information in the programming guiding document. Any questions?
So moved, Robbie Cottle, GDOT Planning.
Second, Michelle Strickland.
Start the vote to the right.
Okay. Is any of the money allocated now? Is for this? Will we lose any of that, or will it just be able to be, you know, because there's a match with the whatever we awarded previously? So will any of that be lost, or are we still good?
Are you talking about the transit project?
Yeah.
Well.
That question?
I talked with the financial director of CAT.
Okay.
We decided that because this program, we are still going to show this information on the CompuWare website. It's better for us to show the latest information. Since we have this information, we just, because people still refer to it. Sure. So we want to make sure that we include the accurate information. So instead of showing for this project, instead of showing 2.56/640, we want to show 2.56/8. So,
okay.
So that's the reason we are doing this TIP amendment.
Jim Ayala, yes.
Amory Burksteiner, yes.
Kayla Brown, yes.
Michelle Strickland, aye.
Robbie Cottle, aye.
Omar Sanati, aye.
Deanna Brooks, aye. And then the next thing on the agenda is the reapportionment of the MPA boundary.
Yeah, the boundary. Aisha, will you do the presentation on this one?
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. I'll just go through this presentation briefly. The focus of this presentation is specifically on the core MPO planning area boundary. The MPO must have a planning boundary, and that boundary is based on the census, specifically the 2020 census. And the boundary is revised using the Savannah urban area, and then also areas expected to become urbanized within the next 20 years. So the process of creating this proposed draft boundary included putting together a work group where we met to review and revise the draft MPA boundary. And this process happened over several months, starting in March and even into June. So we met with the working group multiple times. And then we also met with Effingham County and Bryan County just to ensure that they also had input and approved the proposed boundary. Additionally, we had a recent meeting in June that was a hybrid in-person and online meeting to discuss the boundary further. And with that, this is the proposed draft core MPO boundary. So just to go into a little bit more detail of this boundary, about half of Effingham County will be included in this proposed boundary. It will cut off portions of Guyton and Springfield within Effingham County, but when we discussed this with Effingham County, they were okay with this decision. Additionally, more of Bryan County will be included in the boundary, including the Pembroke area, and then more portions of southern Bryan County around Richmond Hill. This is a comparison of the old boundary compared to the new boundary, and so there's major growth northward and westward. Are there any questions? With that, we are asking for an endorsement of the proposed draft boundary.
Jim, I also moved.
Kayla Brown, second.
Motion's been moved and seconded. Can we start with a vote for endorsement? To my left.
Omar Sanati, yay.
Robbie Cottle, aye.
Michelle Strickland, aye.
Kayla Brown, yes.
Amory Burksteiner, aye.
Jim Ayala, yes.
Deanna Brooks, yes. All right. Thank you, Asia. And so I guess we will go into our status reports. First thing up is the 2050 MTP update.
Okay. The 2050 update, there are several things going on. The first thing is that we are still working on the socioeconomic data development. We actually have a new planner, Mr. Edward Morrow, and now he will be the interim for development services, but we were fortunate to get him before he moved on to the development services. So he was working on this one. And so we got some REMI data from GDOT. Thank you, Robbie. So basically, Edward is reevaluating the methodology because previously we had Gabriel, who was here for about 1 month, 2 months working on it. So Edward is reevaluating that methodology since we got the REMI data. So what we have decided is to solicit the IT department and the help also from the SAGES department. So we're going to do some disaggregation because the REMI data is based on the countywide. So you have population, you have employment, and you have income. So we need to disaggregate all that information to each individual transportation analysis, those TAZs. So they actually, Roger from IT is drafting a script for us. So we want to have something that's just a probably very different from what we submitted before. But we will have revised the data set to you by the end of the month. Another thing that I do want to introduce, Dara. Yeah. Dara is our intern. Dara is working on the checking the functional classification and number of lanes for the travel demand model network, because Asia was working on it, and Asia finished Chatham, Bryan County and Effingham County. But at that time, there were only like myself, Aisha, and Sally, only three of us were left. So we have our hands full. So we couldn't have the staff capability to continue work. So Dara is helping us with that. Dara, how many have you checked?
Like 5,000 are left. I mean, most of the time, like, it's mostly intersections are left over. Chatham County is almost done.
Okay. So I did talk to Dara, and she said I think that the problem with Chatham County probably would be the same about Effingham County and Bryan County. So we were coding the ramps, exit ramps to the interstates as interstate. So functional classification one. But in the travel demand model, I think GDOT is showing that as seven, as local road. So most of those would be probably though that would be the concern. But the number of lanes should be okay probably. But we will finish the check by the end of June and give that to you. Another thing is now we get this planning boundary, we hope to have the MPO board approve the boundary in Wednesday, and then we will coordinate with GDOT. So because we need to start the financial plan development, because we would need to have the GDOT OFM, Office of Financial Management, to give us the revenue projections for the next 25 years, next 20 years for the development. So that would be the basis, but it's based on the new boundary. So the revenue projections will be done that. And then the contributing plans, we're going to have a new planner starting in July. She will be taking the lead on updating the congestion management process. She's a traffic engineer, Genesis. And then we also got Anna. Yeah. Anna is a new planner for MPC. She takes over the urban flooding model, and she has a background in environmental planning. So beyond us, because we know transportation, but we don't know much about the environmental side of it. So we're very glad that Anna is going to help us with that. And another thing that Anna is going to do is, because we have to do like resiliency planning, because this is one of the federal focus areas, resiliency planning. So she's going to probably do some research and then find out how we can incorporate the resiliency planning into the 2050 long-range transportation plan. Another thing, our freight freight plan. Chris is going to give you the presentation today, and it's wrapping up. And from the freight plan, we are trying to have some kind of like a matrix to show this is the recommendation from this plan, that plan, and Chris will cover that. And then after the freight plan is wrapping up, we will build upon the matrix, because we still have a US 80 corridor study that is ongoing, and Chatham County is going to have 204 corridor study, and then the President Street, a railroad elimination study, and then the US 17 corridor study. So we're going to expand all of that and into the matrix. So all those projects probably have check from all those. We will see, do some kind of a ranking. We will see which projects to select for inclusion in the 2050 plan. So I think that's pretty much what we are going to do. And then we are also, we had a coordination meeting with Federal Highway and the GDOT. We were told that affordable housing will be one of the focus areas or area for consideration. So Asia is going to take the lead on doing that, because Asia was doing the housing element for the 2040 comprehensive plan. So we are still waiting for some guidance from FHWA, and after that one is out, and we will decide how we can incorporate affordable housing into the 2050 plan as well. And then the next thing that we want to do, the next steps, because we finished our first round of public meeting last September to November. Yeah. So we are planning to have our second round of public meeting probably in September or October this year, because we do have several studies that have gone through a lot of progress, and we are going to report to the public what we have done. And also we collected a lot of surveys results. We want to share with the public what the survey show, what we need to do. So we are going to focus on that probably starting in July, on just to plan for the second round of public meetings. So that's pretty much what we did regarding 2050 plan. Any questions?
Thank you, Wakara.
Okay.
Up next, we have the Core MPO Regional Freight Plan update.
Is Chris on?
Yes, I am. Am I able to share my screen, Wakara?
Oh, okay. How can they share his screen? Can he share his screen? Yeah. Are we seeing his screen?
How about now?
You can see it online.
Okay, and you see the presentation mode?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Chris Lindsay with Cambridge Systematics. I'm going to give the update today for the Regional Freight Transportation Plan. We've been tasked with helping the MPO to update its freight plan, and on our team as well is AECOM, and as well as Symbiosity. I believe that Denise is there, at least online, if not a person. And we just want to give you an update of essentially what we've been up to over the past several months, and also share with you some draft recommendations for your consideration. So an overview of the agenda for today. First, we want to start off with just an overview of the technical tasks and key findings from the Regional Freight Plan. We'll give you some of the feedback that we've gotten where we reached out to stakeholders. From there, we will convey to the committee what we learned from all of our technical analysis in the form of needs assessment, and also present our draft recommendations and next steps. The other image that you see on the screen right now are the goals and objectives of the freight plan. we tied these to the region's long-range plan to make sure that the freight plan is consistent with all those goals related to safety and security, state of good repair, accessibility, system performance, coordination, and also environment and quality of life. So all of the goals and objectives are really consistent with what the region is doing as part of its broader initiatives. Okay, so an overview of the technical tasks. What you see on the screen now is really just all of the key components of the freight plan. So including stakeholder outreach, which has taken place throughout the course of the study, a needs assessment and analysis, which is really a lot of the technical analysis that looked at crash rates, travel times, pavement conditions, and all the other things that you would expect out of a freight plan. We also looked at land use and economic development, seeing how freight-related land uses have been evolving in the region over time, as well as how different industries have increased their market share over time within the region. Also included in the freight plan was an environmental and community impact scan and analysis. In that component, we really tried to take stock of how the freight system impacts the environment and the communities that are proximate to freight assets. And then finally, we're wrapping everything up now with our recommendations. So we have recommendations pertaining to land use, as well as recommendations pertaining to infrastructure and other improvements. And you will see those, and we'll focus on those a little bit more towards the end of the presentation. The needs assessment and analysis had about 8 different subcomponents where we looked at existing or future conditions, freight performance measures, congestion, bottleneck and safety and security, a specific technical memorandum about that. We also looked at truck parking, taking inventory of the region's truck parking assets. There was a freight resiliency analysis, where we identify the different risks that are posed to the freight network and identify those assets that might be vulnerable. And finally, we wrapped it up with a needs assessment. So here are some of the key broad findings of that assessment. There's more detail in the technical memos that I believe that are posted to the MPO's website. So starting off with safety, really over 3,700 crashes, truck-related crashes in the region from the 2016 to 2020 period. That's almost 70% of all crashes, and just over 2% of these crashes resulted in a serious injury or a fatality. So one thing that we did with all this data was to aggregate it to some spatial zones so we could get an idea of where those hotspots are at on the system and use that to identify some projects that could maybe make a difference and improving the region's freight safety. Another key finding was related to congestion and reliability. Congestion and poor travel times that result to higher costs to businesses. When you have an unreliable freight network, they have to buffer more time into their schedules for motor carriers, for truck drivers, and that, of course, leads to less efficient operations, more costly operations. So we wanted to understand how the region's network is impacted by congestion and reliability, again, so we can identify some areas for potential improvements. And what we found is that portions of some of the key freight corridors, including I-16, I-95, State Route 21, those experienced some of the most significant congestion and reliability challenges in the region. You can kind of see that visually with this map that is on the screen now, where we calculated the truck hours of delay per mile across the freight network, across the highway network, that is. Another key finding was related to at-grade crossings. There are just under 200 public at-grade crossings throughout the region. These contribute to delay, to safety challenges, to emissions. From all of our stakeholder outreach, it was made pretty clear to us that at-grade crossings are an issue and is something that should be accounted for in the freight plan. So we did have specific analyses related to this. And one of the more interesting pieces of information, we found that of these nearly 200 crossings, is that all of the highway rail incidents over the past about 10 years or so were really concentrated at just 34 of those crossings throughout the region. So one of our recommendations, which we'll see later on, is to focus on those specific crossings to make some safety improvements. Equity and environment was another key finding area. We went through and looked at some of the socioeconomic data based off the latest numbers that came in from the census, and we applied the methodology that was used in the NPO's environmental justice plan to identify essentially where these areas are at now. We combined that with information that USDOT has published on historically disadvantaged communities and areas of persistent poverty. And we essentially did an overlay analysis so we can identify where those communities intersect the multimodal freight network and to understand the impacts that the network is having on those communities. And what we found was, in general, you have more intense truck congestion in those communities that you see on the screen now, poor travel time reliability. And we also found that about 90% of the regions at grade crossings are concentrated in these communities as well. We did a similar analysis on the environmental side, really focusing on wetlands and other areas that are important for wildlife habitats. Again, an overlay analysis to understand where the freight system might be impacting these areas in terms of emissions or safety challenges as it pertains to crashes between vehicles and wildlife. And that, again, is included in one of our detailed technical memos. Another key finding, and the last one before I go on to stakeholder outreach, was related to land use. We found that new warehouse development has been accelerating in the region for the past really 6 or so years now. And not only has development activity accelerated, we found that new facilities are becoming larger. So that's going to have impacts on the transportation network as well as on the communities in which those facilities are being sited. One thing that we thought was particularly interesting is that with this new development, you have some emerging freight activity centers. I would say that historically, a lot of freight activity has been centered on the port and also has been centered on that President Street corridor east of downtown. But what we start to see with the analysis, and I think that the discussion of the NPO boundaries kind of reflects this, is that you have these emerging centers to the north, to the west, and to the south of downtown. So notably in that southern half of Effingham County has experienced a lot of industrial-related development. To the west of downtown along the I-16 corridor, you have the Hyundai facility that is coming in, and already in anticipation of that, you have suppliers and other manufacturers locating in that general area. And similarly, south of downtown, you have new developments that are going to be pretty substantial with looking at what's happening along the Belfast Killer Road area, as well as the Rockingham Farms development that is in the southern part of Chatham County. So all of those are emerging freight centers that are going to impact freight over the region, you know, over the mid to long term. So those are some of the key findings I wanted to share with the committee, our activities related to stakeholder outreach. Outreach consisted of one-on-one interviews, online survey, as well as an online public forum. Next week, we have another public forum coming up in conjunction with the EdFAC committee meeting. And what we heard back was really that you have a lot of freight-oriented growth along some of those kind of emerging freight centers that we just spoke about. Another key finding was stakeholders stressed to us the need for better east-west connectivity across Savannah, as well as across downtown Savannah, but also across Effingham County. The at-grade crossings being an issue and just general freight-related congestion throughout the region. When we asked stakeholders what were their priorities, what should we be focusing on for the region, safety and security was the big one, reducing crashes, safety related to at-grade crossings, and also just general congestion and reliability. They really stress to us that reducing congestion and travel times, especially on corridors with high volume of truck traffic, reducing congestion related to at-grade crossings, that those really should be our biggest priorities. And here's just an example of some of the feedback that we were getting as part of some of our interactive sessions with stakeholders. Again, if you read through some of these blurbs that are on the screen, east-west connectivity being a big one, environmental impacts, and just better connectivity throughout the region. So all of that information really went to inform our needs assessment and our draft recommendations, both the technical analysis that you saw earlier, as well as that feedback that we were getting from stakeholders. And based off of that, we came up with about six broad categories of needs, congestion and reliability, focusing on those freight routes with high levels of congestion, improving connectivity for truck traffic throughout the region, focusing on safety, having projects and policies that can lower crash rates, infrastructure conditions. Some of the roadways get beat up pretty badly due to high volumes of truck traffic. That's, you know, pretty clear in the constitutionally exempt area right near the port where they get a lot of oversized, overweight traffic associated with those private terminals. Truck parking was another issue. Some stakeholders did emphasize that they sometimes experience trucks parking in areas where they should not be as they await delivery or pickup windows. And lastly, resiliency. We did do a resiliency analysis. It showed that there are a lot of freight assets that could be prone to flooding or hurricanes or other risks. And so having some strategies for addressing that we felt was important too. So this slide here really outlines our process for developing recommendations. The first thing we did was we collected recommendations from previous plans and studies. We didn't want to duplicate anything that was already out there. We thought it would be better to more so enhance and emphasize those already recommended improvements and show how they benefit freight. We filtered a lot of previous project recommendations to focus in on those that impact the freight network. And lastly, we filled in the gaps. So areas where we saw that there was a need and there wasn't a previous recommendation, we put a recommendation there. So collecting previous recommendations, filtering, enhancing, filling in those gaps was our general process. The table towards the bottom of the screen shows the different types of recommendations that you will see later on. So one is project recommendations. These are generally capital technology operational investments in this physical network. The next category are policy recommendations. These are more so guidelines or principles for the region to follow. We also included in the policy bucket of future studies or, you know, areas where we thought that we needed maybe a deeper dive. And lastly, the set of recommendations includes programs. These are ongoing actions, initiatives that we think that the region should be engaging in to support freight. This slide here just shows what we mean with those previous project recommendations. We collected these from the recently completed Coastal Empire study, corridor studies for State Route 21 and 307. Effingham County did a very detailed comprehensive transportation master plan. We drew from that as well. We looked at projects that were included in the Chatham County's most recent T-SPLOS effort, as well as transportation studies for North and South Bryan County. All in all, this was about 200 recommendations, previous project recommendations that we went through. And once we filtered out, we had a prioritization framework for those. So with our EDFAT, we shared our draft kind of prioritization framework and asked for feedback on how we should score projects, which kind of needs areas needed more points versus others. And you see that on the screen here with safety and security, as well as access accessibility kind of getting the most points, but also state of good repair system performance. And so this is how we kind of tier projects. tier one to tier three, tier one being higher impact, tier three being lower impact. We put things on a time frame, short to mid to long term, based off of complexity of cost. And also we group projects into a group A or group B. Group A being those projects that are within or intersect the NPO boundaries, so that can be potentially included in the TIP, versus those that fall outside of those boundaries, which can't be included in the TIP, but it's important for the region to support. And this slide here summarizes the draft recommendations. So we have eight different, I would call them buckets of recommendations, and within those buckets are specific strategies. So that's advancing strategic capacity expansions, implementing operational strategies to improve freight mobility, supporting increased capacity, implementing technology strategies, increasing access to safe truck parking, improving freight network resiliency, mitigating impacts on communities and the environment, and integrating freight into land use planning. So there are about 98 recommended strategies, and you can see how project versus policy versus program strategies, how those fit within each of those eight buckets that we just called out. So I want to briefly present just an overview of generally kind of what's included in each recommendation bucket. So strategic capacity expansion, there have been a number that have been proposed as part of previous plans. We took those and we incorporated them into ours. We made some additional recommendations as well. So some examples are Effingham Parkway, considering some alternative alignments for that as it comes into that Tuna DeMulch Parkway corridor. Increasing network redundancy in some of those emerging freight clusters. That was really called out to us by stakeholders. And also looking at some new opportunities to increase connectivity, increase capacity. So another recommendation was a potential connector between John Carter Road and Pine Barren Road to have an alternative east-west Canard corridor for I-16. For operational strategies, there have been a number of recommendations. For sit-on timing, for improving specific intersections, that's generally what's included in here. We make some additional ones for enhancing east-west connectivity. Really included in that are some recommendations for the eastern half of Durand, also some potential improvements on Freeman Parkway to facilitate the east-west travel across more of the core of the city, the core of the urban area. And also thinking about a phase two for the US 17 corridor study, we know that the county, Chatham County, is currently in the process of electing someone to do a study that focuses on Chatham. But as part of our study, we found that really having something that extends into Bryan County and potentially even into Liberty County could be beneficial for the region. Increasing capacity and operations on the rail network. We have some recommendations for helping railroad providers increase local and regional freight rail capacity. When we spoke to shippers and we spoke to railroads as well, there was some concern that the region's, call it takeaway capacity, was being constrained by development. And so thinking about some ways that the region can support it, such that everything doesn't have to travel on the highway network, and you maintain a high level of operations for the freight rail network as well. And also some recommended safety improvements for those 34 crossings that experience crashes, and also potential opportunities to coordinate with the railroads for improving pavement conditions at certain crossings as well. We recommend some technology strategies as well. One of them is looking at maybe a truck parking availability system pilot focused on the Welcome Center on I-95, alerting truck drivers to the number of spaces that are at that facility, as well as real-time availability. Could be a technology strategy for the region. One project that came from stakeholder feedback was Lathrop Avenue, and trucks sometimes getting stuck under a pretty low vertical clearance. One technology solution is having an overheight warning system. And also looking at opportunities for freight signal priority on US 80 and real-time signage for port traffic. Related to that, increasing access to safe truck parking, making recommendations for a regional truck parking demand study. That's really just trying to estimate what is the impact that new developments have on truck parking, and then taking that information and incorporating it into traffic impact assessment such that potentially those developments can have space for truck staging areas or longer term truck parking areas such that you don't have those impact on adjacent properties or trucks parking on roadway shoulders. The other recommendation, improving freight network resiliency. We did do a resiliency analysis as part of this study, identifying some of these vulnerable assets. This would be the next step in that process where you look at how supply chains can be disrupted because of these assets, as well as potential opportunities to harden those assets such that they aren't so vulnerable. So this was the kind of a planning level analysis that we did. What we're recommending is essentially the next step in that process, something more detailed and engineering focused. This recommendation is mitigating impacts on communities and the environment. Again, we found that there are some disproportionate impacts on communities that are proximate to some of these freight assets. We have some recommendations for that to be mitigated. And also included in this category is not just focusing on kind of those negative impacts that freight might have, but also focusing in on what are those opportunities. So one recommendation is partnering with CAT to more so incorporate some of these industrial hubs into the transit network. Though they have impacts on communities and on the transportation network, they're also very important economic centers, they're important job centers. So this is one of our equity strategies for making an opportunity for communities to kind of be integrated into some of those facilities in a meaningful manner. And then the last recommendation area was incorporating freight considerations into land use. One of the big recommendations is to conduct a region-wide freight efficient land use plan. The region's land use planning has pretty much been broken up county to county. And we thought that, you know, freight doesn't recognize these jurisdictional boundaries. So it would be beneficial for the region to have a land use plan focused on freight that includes all three counties simultaneously. And another recommendation that is related to this is the last one that you see at the bottom of your screen, encouraging community improvement districts to support freight operations. One thing that you've seen in Atlanta is the development of community improvement districts that are focused in on some of these freight clusters. And because they can use a portion of their tax revenue to address transportation infrastructure concerns, this is just a way to take some of the kind of revenue that is being generated from freight and essentially putting that back into the freight network. Oftentimes, CIDs can be more nimble than local governments in addressing pavement concerns, wayfinding, signage issues, just some of those basic maintenance things. So we thought that that might be a good strategy for the region to consider as well. So those are our recommendations. Our next steps are really to gather feedback from this committee and from others. We're going to present our draft recommendations at the EdFat/public meeting that will be coming up on Monday. Also presenting some of these at the NPO board meeting. And based off the feedback that we get from you all and from these other groups, we're going to finalize these recommendations and complete the final report and just wrap up our freight plan. I know that was a lot, but thank you all for bearing with me. I'm happy to answer any questions or hear any thoughts and concerns that the group has.
Chris, Jim Iel here with Savannah Hilton Head International Airport. I looked through the slides and through all the recommendations. I know we're a small piece of the puzzle out here with the port, but how much did you guys delve into the air cargo? Because we are seeing a significant amount of growth out there. So I didn't see anything really with air cargo in this, but did you guys really look into that?
So, you know, as part of our needs assessment, we did look at air cargo specifically. We included a modal profile, and we understand that there have been some cargo investments at the airport as well. So we did include it in there. There wasn't a specific air cargo recommendation area, but I think that some of the land side improvements that we're recommending would be beneficial to the airport. So for instance, both as part of our study and the Coastal Empire study, and also I believe the county's T-SWAT, that there was a recommendation for I-95 at Airways Avenue. That's included in ours as well. We make some recommendations for State Route 307 as well as Gulfstream Road, which could benefit cargo coming in and out of the airport. So we didn't make anything. We didn't have any specific recommendations for the airport facilities themselves, but we did have recommendations for the roadway facilities that serve the airport. But I will say, if there are some specific things you would like us to take another look at, please let us know, because we're in draft form now, so we still have opportunity to get these in there if we missed anything.
That would be great. Maybe I can talk to you here. I'm going to try to be at the meeting on Monday, but if not, maybe we could talk, give you a call, and we could discuss more.
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you.
Hey, I just have a quick question. This is Robbie Caudill with GDOT Planning. Regarding the community improvement districts, is that tax revenue going to be a new source of revenue, or will it be diverted from existing sources of revenue?
I would consider it a new source of revenue because it's essentially a fraction of their, I think it's a 20, I can't recall the exact number, but it's a fraction of their property taxes. So, that money would normally go into, I guess, a general revenue fund, not specifically tied to transportation. But with community improvement districts, I mean, they don't have to spend their money on transportation, but transportation is generally one of those areas that they do focus a lot on. Atlanta Regional Commission has a similar program, so I would consider that a new source, but it is a diversion from property taxes, essentially.
Okay, thank you.
Chris, this is Michael. I have a question for you, too. I forward to you the list that Chatham County got award for, like, great improvement, great separation improvement projects. Have you checked that list against our recommendations to see whether they're consistent?
I would double check that. I can't call out each specific crossing, but I know that those are the ones that are generally between, I want to say, State Route 25 and the river. Some of the crossings, so there probably is some overlap. So we'll double check just to, again, to make sure. That's a good suggestion. We'll double check, but I think that the crossings that we're recommending for, I guess, a harder, more specific project, such as like President Street, those weren't included in that program. But we did take a look at that, but we'll double check it again just to make sure.
Yeah, I think the county got that only for the preliminary engineering money, right? So it doesn't include construction money.
Yes, I believe that's correct.
Okay. So we'll double check on those lists. Okay, thank you.
Yes. Yeah. No problem. Thank you.
Hi, this is Anna Bori. Just had a quick question about your green infrastructure resiliency recommendations. Will that include design guidelines for different types of roads or structures? Or is it just going to simply be more, you should use green infrastructure?
So that was a more general recommendation for incorporating green infrastructure. We didn't propose any specific design guidelines, but there's probably some information out there that we could incorporate into that recommendation regarding that, though.
Yeah, I'd be really interested to see if there's anything more specific for freight planning and green infrastructure and what would be more suitable for those roads.
Okay, we can look into that because I can think of like more specific guidance for say complete streets with freight. I know that I believe Federal Highway authored that document that has some more specific recommendations for that. So I would imagine that included in there might be some takeaways for green infrastructure as well.
Great, thanks.
Any other questions for Chris? All right. Thank you so much for the presentation, Chris. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you all.
All right. And the next thing we have is the urban flooding model study update.
No. Oh, sorry. Well, yeah, I'm seeing on screen. Sorry. Show my screen. Got it. Hi, everyone. My name is Anna McQuarrie. I'm a new planner here at the MPC and MPO. I've been working on some resiliency projects. So I just started at the beginning of the month. And one of my first projects I'll be working on is the urban flood model study with UGA. This project update may look a little bit different than it did when it was originally posted. We updated it again this morning. And so I'm the new project manager, probably the fourth or fifth project manager at this point, and I'm really excited to see this study to fruition. And so I have been able to meet with the project lead, Dr. Matt Bilski, one-on-one to discuss where the project is, and then I attended the UGA team's monthly meeting yesterday as well, so I was able to meet the different academics and graduate students, professionals working on this project, and talk a little bit about a timely delivery of expected products. So right now, looking at their review, their updated project management plan that was sent to an MPC staff member in January. Some of the products were expected in November. However, the project contract is for October 31st. So I'm going to be working with MPC staff, MPC MPO staff, and UGA to figure out a deadline for delivery of products. The SWIM model, the stormwater management model, and hydrographs are on time and expected to be completed in July and August, as was originally stated in their project management plan. Data availability and accuracy have been a challenge. As someone who has tried to get stormwater data myself for research, it is very, very difficult. So I sympathize with that. But I am going to see some drafts starting next week with some description paragraphs, and then we'll see a more full draft starting, I think, mid-July. Right, other products can be expected closer to October, so social vulnerability metrics, financial stewardship, and project prioritization tool. And right now, this has changed from previous updates, is that the study is expected to be completed in October.
Any questions for Anna? All right. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you.
All right. Up next, we have the non-motorized transportation plan update.
Hello, everyone. I'll just go through this presentation briefly. So some of the work that we've been doing on the non-motorized transportation plan is drafting new chapters.
Some of the chapters that I'm most excited to introduce are infill development as a tool for creating a more walkable and bikeable town, the impact of urban heat on non-car travel, and then also a chapter on what is a strode and how does it impact street safety. And so I thought it was a really interesting and also necessary to introduce some concepts that may seem like they're a little bit out of the realm of non-motorized transportation, but might actually be helpful in improving biking and walking within the local area. Additionally, we are in the process of tracking existing projects within the non-motorized transportation plan. There are over 400 projects listed in the current plan, and many of them do not have project IDs, so it's a little difficult to know where those projects stand. We're also making sure we document new trails, bike lanes, and sidewalks that may not have been in the current plan, which was originally completed in 2014 and then updated in 2018 and 2020. Additionally, we are exploring low-cost technology solutions for traffic calming and improving biking and walking conditions. So a lot of the updates that can be extremely helpful for pedestrians and cyclists don't have to be expensive. They could be as simple as traffic lights or signage. This is an example of a city that was testing a traffic light, which only turns green when drivers slow down to the correct speed limit, and then they're allowed to go through. So it's inexpensive compared to maybe some other infrastructure updates. Additionally, staff also identified common themes from open-ended responses on public surveys. So for this, we analyzed, me and also Rithvika Dara, who was introduced earlier, some of the open-ended questions on the MTP survey, and we found some commonalities in what people were saying. And so a lot of people were concerned with safety and also separation. So no matter if the respondent primarily drove or if they primarily biked, they both groups wanted more physical barrier and physical separation between cyclists and motorists. There were also concerns of connectivity, especially regarding sidewalk coverage. And then also a lot of respondents wanted more policy and education so that the community could be more knowledgeable of bike and pedestrian laws and safety practices. And then this is also a word cloud that Rithvika put together just to give an idea of some of the common words that people were discussing within their open-ended responses in the survey, such as access, sidewalks, campaigns, greenways, just to name a few words. Additionally, we had a steering committee meeting this month, and the focus of the discussion was on this map. Besides one piece of this network, the steering committee agreed that this was something that we could add to our project list. And when talking to the steering committee, there was also a strong recommendation to ensure that the faster and more high volume roadways had some type of barrier separation to make them safer. So some of the next steps that we'll be doing for the non-motorized plan is using satellite images to observe gaps in sidewalk coverage, examining the infrastructure characteristics of the most dangerous roadways for cyclists and pedestrians, and that will be based off of new metric data. And then also exploring the scoring criteria methodology used by the Institute for Transportation and Development Policy. So the current plan does have a scoring criteria and methodology. And so we really just wanted to review if it's still relevant or if it's something to be updated or changed. Additionally, I wanted to acknowledge a lot of the help that Rithvika has been giving to this project. So she has a lot of strong quantitative and qualitative skills and a lot of experience in planning for non-motorized transportation. And so some of what we will also be doing within this plan is examining the parameters for push factors to encourage more biking and walking, and then also analyzing harm reduction strategies, and then analyzing crash data within GIS to identify crash hotspots. And so we wanted to use both quantitative and qualitative assessments to essentially analyze what exactly we need to do to improve biking and walking within the area. Are there any questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Asia. Up next, we have the US 80 corridor study status update.
We probably don't have anybody from Pooler, but they do attach. They did provide this project status report. What I noticed is that they're going to do, they're working on the draft alternatives analysis. So since Chris was talking about the freight plan, he's compiling the project list from the other previous studies, like 21, 307, all that. So this would be the draft recommendation that we can forward so we can incorporate into the freight plan as well, this draft alternative analysis.
Thank you so much, Wakoda. And then next is the fiscal year 2024-2027 TIP development.
Okay. We actually got the revenue projections and then the proposed project list, the lump sum project list, and several supporting obligation list, authorization list. So supporting documentation from GDOT. So we actually had a public prioritization meeting in April. So we established the TIP prioritization approach. So I was in the process of developing the draft preliminary TIP. The comment period will start in July, on July the 19th to be specific. So it will be a 30-day public review comment period. But before that, we need to give FHWA, FTA, and the GDOT some time to review the product to make sure that information is okay to be presented to the public. So as of now, I have finished chapter one, chapter two, and forwarded that information to FHWA, GDOT, and FTA for review. I'm focusing on chapter three, which are the specific project information and the financial plan development. So what happened is, at the end of May and the beginning of June, because of the debt ceiling discussion, so we actually have to spend some of the COVID relief funds very soon, very fast. So it's like within 1 day or 2 day. So what we did is we did a series of TIP administrative modifications. So we did some funding swamp. So basically the three studies that was previously funded by Y230 funds got the CRESA funds. So Chatham County doesn't have to provide the local match because we just need to use that funds. So we got CRESA funds on the 204 US 17 and the President Street project. And we also have some CRESA funds, for the Two Millennium Park Trail, phase 2B. And then the Green Island Trail project. So that means, the Green Island has 301 funds previously on it. So now that 30 funds will be released back to the pot. And then the three studies that have Y230, they don't need the Y230 anymore. So those funds will be reallocated, will be put back into our pot as well. So, but they are not going to be like all add up in fiscal year 2024. So they will be redistributed properly in 2024, 2025, 2026, 2027. So right now I'm coordinating with GDOT to probably have like updated revenue projection to see what that looks like. And also working with CAT, probably I need to talk to Ambria afterwards. But I've been working with Stephanie Cutter. She provided me some information because what CAT uses is like FTA obligation. So I don't think that information is available yet. So they have to use some kind of estimate, but information that Stephanie provided me, some of them is not accurate. I can just say distinctly it's not accurate. And also we need to update information like financial justification. We're still showing 2019 information because we're in 2023. You need to show at least 2022 information. So we're going to work with CAT on that. So it's like many things are still in flux. So that's why I really cannot have this done. But my plan is to properly have the draft chapter three done, hopefully, by the end of next week. So at least FHWA and FTA and GDOT can look at it. And then we can still get information properly before the real public comment period starts and then revise that. We also need to probably, after I get updated revenue, we'll probably have like online meeting or something, virtual meeting with the TCC to talk about the financial balance after we get that information. So just want to let you know about that. I think the Truman Linear Park, I forgot to mention, because Truman Linear Park got the earmark funds. So that means they have to release some of the 301 funds as well. So that's why all that, so we will have a more revenues basically for Y230 and Y301. Okay, that's it.
I just wanted to say thank you, YCODA, for being as organized as you were to capture those CRISA funds. They are 100% federally reimbursed. So not only are you getting additional money, you don't actually have to match these COVID relief funds. It was. Thank you.
Yeah, we just don't want to return even 1 cent to the federal government, right? Okay.
Any other questions on the TIP development? All right, and then we'll move on to the MOU and bylaws updates.
Okay, now that we established the boundary, we need to work on the MOUs and the bylaws. The MOUs, the major thing probably, because we're going to add in some new jurisdictions like Rincon and Pembroke or something, so we need to add those into the MOU. And also probably we need to revise the fee structure. So we are going to probably have separate meetings just to focus on those maybe in July, August. And Melanie also talking about having a specialized meeting, probably in September, like special court meeting. And because, I mean, we have this meeting, we cover so many agenda items. There's no way that we can focus on that specifics. And we also want to probably have like working group meetings, and also probably meetings with the individual committees to talk about their own bylaws, because I can show you these are the notes that we had for the June 2nd workshop. You can see the notes. So basically we want an election for the MPO board, and we will talk about these are the suggestions from working group from the workshop. So you can see those, and then we also had a working group meeting on June 15th. And so you can see the working group notes over here as well. So regarding TCC, we were talking about reducing the voting seats for MPC, because currently Melanie and I so we have two voting seats. Because we only have one voting seat on MPC, I have voting seats on the MPO board. So we thought maybe TCC we can reduce. So Melanie might be the voting member. I will be the staff member, but if she's not here, I can be the alternate. And also we talk about those non-participating jurisdictions like Vordenburg. They just probably don't have the staff capabilities. So maybe we move them to non-voting advisory members, something like that. And also we definitely need to add like additional seats for Bryan and FM counties, because they are gaining seats on the MPO board as well. So quorum, we thought about like 7 members still, as a quorum, but these are still need to be like worked out. So we probably will have some kind of meetings or individual meetings with the individual committees, August and September. So if you want to review the notes, they're attached to the agendas.
Any specific questions for Wakoda on that? All right. Thank you very much. We will go on to the information reports, starting with the GDOT project status update.
Okay, is Katie on? Okay.
Hey, this is Katie. So to start, number one, we usually have the Savannah River Bridge, but its design is complete and it's been moved to active construction for reporting. So we have Middle River Bridge left and it's submitted its final bridge design and it's now in review. Number two, 19219, State Route 404 Spur at Talmadge Memorial Bridge. The development of the schedule is underway. Three, 15151, the safety improvements on State Route 204 from State Route 21 to Rio Road. The PCRF is in progress to shift the schedule. The next major milestone is PFPR. It's anticipated in September and LIT will be shifting to 26. 15675, safety improvements on I-16 at Chatham Parkway. The LIT scheduled for July 23. 5 and 6, the twin projects 15704 and 15705, bridge replacement over Back River and widening on State Route 404 Spur from northeast of Savannah Harbor to Back River. Concept was approved on June the 12th and is now working toward PFPR. 7 and 8, 17414, Bull River and Lazaretta bridge replacements. Bull River's, they're both waiting on the environmental document. 18023, roundabout State Route 30 at Hodgefield Road. Concept's been has been approved now and it's beginning to work toward PFPR for construction projects. I've been updated since this report was sent in. And so 12757 has been updated to 62%. And the DDI project has been updated to 77%. And then skip down to 13741. Savannah River and Port Wentworth, number three right there. That's where we stuck it in. It's been updated to 22% here. And then 521855, State Route 26 from I-516 to Victory Drive. It relet in April. It was awarded in May, and it's now awaiting NTP. And that's all we have.
Any questions?
Yes, I have a question real quick. On the project of Highway 21, and I'm almost an athlete with the city of Port Wentworth, Highway 21 and Highway 30, you have in here that is a 91% done. What is left on that project to be able to close it out?
I'm looking at it real quick. Let me check and I'll get back with you.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? All right, thank you. I'll go ahead and do the Chatham County project status update. Chavis Road improvements and Girard Avenue improvements, those are both going. The concept report has been submitted for Girard Avenue. Green Island Road path is scheduled for a kickoff meeting in July. The studies for State Route 25, State Route 204 access, and President Street at Truman Railroad study, all of those are currently in phase two of our selection process. Quaco Road widening project, the clearing contract has been approved. Johnny Mercer at Lyman Hall, that project will be going to the board on tomorrow. And then the just wanted to highlight the Johnny Mercer at Wall Tower project, which is in preliminary design for a roundabout at the intersection of Johnny Mercer Boulevard and Wall Tower Road. Are there any questions on any of those projects?
I have a question because the funds for the I-95 at the scoping study and then the three studies. So have you started the PFA development with GDOT?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'll be glad to know.
Anything else? All right. Next is the City of Savannah project status update.
Michelle Strickland with City of Savannah. The Delessis Avenue widening project, dry utility relocations are complete, and the contractor is moving to storm drainage improvements and water and sewer relocations. The 516 at Duren, Project Duren, additional environmental justice outreach is being developed as directed by Federal Highway, and the Truman Linear Park Trail Phase 2B construction is authorized, and the project will be out for bid. And this was actually, as I understand, they're actually holding a pre-bid, I believe, next week.
Okay, Michelle, last time I had the meeting was with Nick and the purchasing department. They were saying the Delessis Avenue. So city hasn't reimbursed GDOT. So you come up with the local money to pay the consultant to do that. So you really need to catch up with, like reimbursing GDOT so that you can get the funds.
Delessis or Truman?
Delessis.
Okay. I didn't know that Nick was involved with Delessis.
Well, it's purchasing department. I think it's purchasing department. So what they were telling me is that the consultant invoiced the city. The city didn't get invoiced from GDOT, and they already paid with the local money. So we probably need to.
Okay. Yeah. I'll touch base with Steve and
yeah, check on that.
Yeah, I will.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Up next, Savannah Hilton Head International Airport project updates.
Thank you. Just two major projects going on right now. Our security checkpoint expansion, drove the piles a couple weeks ago, trying to get out of the ground, but the rain has really hurt us in the last couple weeks. We need another drought. The demo air cargo project, we got through phase one, currently in the project, process of building taxi lane. Again, the rain is hindering us there, but, projects are moving along out at the airport. That's all.
All right, thank you, Jim. Chatham Area Transit Project Updates.
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. Some of my bullets will be slightly different than what's shown on the screen. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, so just warning you. So when it comes to our paratransit vehicles, we just actually received our paratransit vehicles. Some of you all were actually at our press conference the other day, so we received those and revealed those to the community last Friday. As far as our three diesel bus replacements, the estimated completion is still June, so hopefully we'll be able to get those out, if not by the last week of June, hopefully by mid-July. So hopefully those will be in service by then. When it comes to our hardware and our ferry vessels, we are still waiting on the maintenance for our ferries. So hopefully that will be completed, and so we will be completed with our final phase on that project. When it comes to, again, ferry maintenance and the ferry dock, we're still awaiting our appraisals and the review of those appraisals and the submission to the FTA and also waiting on the release of those funds. Let me make sure. I'm going to hop down to the AOPP grant. So we are basically, we're still holding a study, and hopefully we'll be able to complete that soon when it comes to having that done within fiscal year of 2023, when we're talking about our planning and analysis of the study, our study efforts, and then hopping down to our ARP route restoration analysis. Instead of expecting a completion at the end of fiscal year 2023, we're expecting that to be completed at the end of 2024. So that was corrected today. And when it comes to our master transit plan, our CAP board, our personal board, they will be considering that for adoption in July. And we will hopefully be able to present that to the MPO in August.
Okay, great. For CAT, Chatham County, City of Savannah, and GDOT, if you have your, like your report a little bit different from what we attached over here, so if you have the updated report, please send it to us so that we can attach the updated reports for the MPO board meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Do we have anything for LATS SEDOT project status updates?
The LATS provided this information, but Stephanie's not on. Yeah, but she did provide this information. They only have like two major projects. One is I-95 Whitney, another one is 17 Whitney.
Okay, thank you. And then the TIP funding tracking report.
Sally has been coordinating with you. I think who was the. So we got some information for the TIP tracking from Chatham County, right? I updated the part for City of Savannah, but you need to just go into this like highlighted version because these highlighted cells are the ones that I made some changes based on the tracking of the TIP status checking. But if you see anything that is different, that you have more updates, please let us know, and then we will update this table because this is how we track how we spend the money.
All right. Thank you very much. Are there any other comments? Okay. Thank you so much. That will be it. Our next meeting for TCC will be August 17th at 2:00.
Okay. Thank you.